Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
Welcome to True Crime to Go. What can I get for you?
Try it again.
Yeah.
Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
Welcome to True Crime to Go. What can I get for you?
Oh, yeah. I'm really looking for something old school today. Maybe like about a payphone or something crazy that doesn't exist.
Pull up to the second window and we'll see you next crime.
Welcome to True Crime to Go. I am John here with Jamie. We got a true crime story in 10 minutes or less. How you doing, man?
I'm doing really well. We're trying a little video recording here, and because you refuse to use our new chairs, I look significantly taller than you, which is not true.
Yeah. If I was in our new chairs, I would be way up there. Yeah.
So this case, John, you sent to me on TikTok. We don't have a ton of time to beat around the bush because it's pretty detailed.
I do want to say thank you for Mr. Dewey, a good friend of mine, for sending this to me, and I appreciate it. And with that, why don't you get the ball rolling?
We're going to talk about a unique case of a master thief who targeted payphones in the 1980s. Tell us what a payphone is, John.
Yeah, man, I used them all the time. So back before there were cell phones in every person's front pocket, you had to pull off to the side of the road or find yourself in a convenience store to find a payphone if you needed to make a call. You would stick a quarter in, wait for the beep, dial the number, and then you would have 5 or 10 minutes to have a phone conversation.
That was a limited amount of time, and before it cuts you off, it would always say, you have 2 minutes remaining.
You'd have to put another quarter in.
So today we're going to talk about a guy named James Clark, also known as the Payphone Bandit, who managed to breach the supposedly impenetrable coin boxes on these phones and make off with somewhere between $500,000 and $1 million. Clark's method was pretty ingenious. He had custom-made tools that he used to pick the locks and gauge how much money was actually inside. Then he'd pretend to make a call while he was opening the coin box, and the phone would still be functioning so people wouldn't ask any questions. And then he would take the money and walk away. Nobody would know anything until they came to collect the coins.
Yeah, he would put a fake box there after he was done. And like you said, the phones kept working, so everybody was able to use it, but it was just a fake box collecting the money. His scheme was so clever that it took authorities years to catch him. Would you believe me if I told you the FBI got involved? Because he was operating in multiple states. He was finally arrested in 1988 after a tip led the FBI to his location in California. Clark was sentenced to 3 years in prison for grand theft and tampering with coin machines.
And he was operating within 30 different states. He's doing this everywhere and getting rich doing it.
Yeah. And what's fascinating about this case is that Clark was a machinist by trade, and he had a history of counterfeiting. He actually was arrested once for trying to use counterfeit money. He used his skills to create the tools that he needed to breach the payphones. Payphones are pretty impenetrable. I mean, they're a really good safe. But he made his own locksmith tools that were like specific to the Bell Southern telephones, because that was a huge company based out of Ohio that made these payphones.
Yeah, he was. It took somebody with a special set of skills to do this, and he was exactly that.
In 1968, like I said, he was arrested for trying to arrange counterfeit money from a system that used contacts in Europe, and they would have put $50 million in fake money into circulation, but he was caught and sentenced to 3 years in prison for that too. In order to catch Clark, law enforcement had to rely on telltale series of scratches that he made when he was trying to pick the locks, and that would help police to identify that this was indeed his handiwork. And it wasn't until they received a tip from an informant that they were able to finally track him down.
Clark's MO was to target payphones near the interstate so he could be in and out and be gone, often near country western bars. He'd use the stolen quarters to pay for food and lodging, sometimes exchanging them for cash at the banks. He was known to use the name James Bell, which was kind of a nod to the company that he was ripping off. So maybe a little bit of arrogance showing for James there. The investigation, like you said, was a joint effort between the FBI and local police departments across 30 different states. They were baffled by the lack of evidence. There were no fingerprints left behind. This was before DNA. The only clue were those scratches you mentioned. His exact tool set and technique has never been publicly disclosed and is not in any documents from the case, which is fascinating to me that they're worried that other people will copy it still today. He had two appearances on America's Most Wanted. There was a $25,000 reward for tips leading to his arrest. Otherwise, there was nothing the phone company could do about this. It would have cost him about $2 million to replace all the phones with others that he couldn't break into. During this time, he was stealing around $70,000 a year from these phones. So they would have actually lost more money replacing the phones than they were with him robbing them. The total number is unknown, but like I said, it was somewhere between $500,000 and $1 million.
I mean, this was also just a great tax write-off for Bell. I mean, losing $100,000 a year. We'll just write that off. It's really interesting. And he even had like a special tool that he would stick in the box to see how full it was. And he said that if it wasn't all the way full, he wasn't going to spend time to do it.
Yep.
So how much would he have made if he stole money from every single payphone he went to? After his arrest, Clark was found with the unique lockpicking tools in his apartment, which were later used as evidence in his trial. His attorney described him as an American tinkerer, and Clark himself admitted to being the man that police had been searching for. Clark's sentencing was complex because he faced charges in multiple states, and ultimately he received only 3 years in prison for the crime that he committed in Ohio, with potentially additional sentences from other states. But yeah, 3 years for stealing that much money. James Clark's story is a fascinating one, and it highlights the cat and mouse game between criminals and law enforcement. The case also led to changes in the way payphones were designed and secured, making it much harder for future thieves to follow in Clark's footsteps. Of course, payphones are almost non-existent now. Clark passed away in 2012, and we have not seen such a successful scheme ever since. This guy was really one of the only people doing this, because if you stole money from one phone, you're not even going to get $100. So imagine how many phones. Do the math for me. How many phones do you have to hit if the average yield was $100 to get $1 million?
Yeah. So you move two zeros. That's
100,000 phones.
That's 10,000 phones.
10,000 phones. That's and he would drive his car. He would mostly use the payphones that were around interstates because people would get off the interstate and use the phone. It was a high traffic phone. So he had a good system, and it made him a lot of money.
And to be clear, we're very against crime, but there's something to be said for this guy's ingenuity here, and certainly glad he was caught, glad it stopped. But somebody that made a lot of money and probably would have got away with it if he would just dial the greed back a little. That's why it gets everybody.
Dialed the greed. That's a good pun. I don't know if you intended to do that or not.
But
I, a lot like Clark, never paid for a phone call. I found the sweet spot that I could hit really hard and they would pop a quarter out, and then I would use that quarter to pay for my call.
Why didn't you just keep getting quarters and take them like our...
I wasn't greedy, man. I just needed the ride.
And that's why you're here and not in prison.
Yep. Or rich.
Guys, we appreciate you very much. This is a fascinating story and a perfect one, I think, for us to cover in 10 minutes or less.
Would you like crime with that?
You've listened to True Crime Cast, distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.